STS is go.
Houston flight is go.
Pilot call.
STM is go.
Safety cost is go.
FDE is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Site Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people.
On RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. It is the Tuesday night edition of the show, 26th of April. Welcome to it, everybody. Hello, Diane.
Hello, Craig, and how are you this evening?
I am doing great.
Okay, good.
I am. It's early in the week, but it's nearing the end of the month, and, you know, we had some weird weather over the past several days. We had 94 degrees last Friday. Then Saturday and Sunday, it was cloudy, windy, rainy, and snowed.
Oh, fun. Well, here, you know, it's still paradise. The humidity has not really crept in yet, so it's still not total. Turn on the air conditioner and don't shut it off till November weather.
Well, you know, around here in north central Nebraska, we're kind of getting ready for spring. I mean, we're ready for it, but... You know, it'd be nice. Things are starting to green up a little bit. The moisture we got over the weekend, lawns are starting to green up. The pastures, the cattle pastures out here are starting to green up. You know, so we're ready for actual rain. We're ready to be done with winter and just get on with spring.
Oh, okay. Well, pretty soon it will be summer, so.
Yeah, we know. We got that coming. Folks, we got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. Stuff. And, Diane, you're covering on lies told and what ifs.
Yes. And, guys, it's kind of, you know, Ukraine revisited, but in a different way this time.
Yeah, you're talking more about Putin this time around. Yeah.
Yes.
So this is going to be interesting, folks. You don't want to miss that. I've got the meme and the mirror.
Okay.
Right?
And I know what that's about, and some people need to take a good hard look at themselves in a mirror.
You know, it's an interesting article, not only to read through, but to look at the illustrations, because there's stuff to read in the illustrations in that. So we'll get to all of that coming up here in a little bit. But let's start with Joe Biden. And he made a comment the other day. He was at some outdoor event, and somebody was talking about the Green New Deal and, you know, greeny weeny energy crap and everything. And somebody asked about the military, and he kind of turns and he says, you know, we're going to make all of our military vehicles climate friendly.
Yes. And they were heralding it, the news media, when he said this at an Earth Day gathering in Seattle, Washington. And it's actually quite stupid when you think about it. Climate friendly. You mean the cars will stay at a nice, let's say, 75 degrees as they're driving along?
No.
Climate friendly? He didn't say green.
Well, climate friendly, that's the new term for green.
Yeah, they're trying to change their same old, same old.
But can I just start with the most obvious piece of stupidity in that statement?
Sure.
He flew an Air Force One from Washington, D.C. to Seattle. That's all the way across the country in the largest private jet on Earth.
Right.
To talk about making our military go greeny-weeny.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's a hypocrite also because, you know, the guy owns a 68 Corvette, which I wouldn't say is exactly eco-friendly.
Right. It's a cool car, but...
Yeah, a cool car, but, you know, come on, it's not. And how could military vehicles, seriously, think about it, climate friendly? Okay, they're out on a mission, and they're in the middle of, let's say, Ukraine. Excuse me, Mr. Ukrainian, where is the nearest charging station?
Well, first of all, let's think about the obvious, the Army tank.
Okay.
Okay. I don't know how many Army tanks we have in our Army.
A lot.
I know we have more in our Army than we do in the Air Force or the Marines or in the Navy, but we have a lot of Army tanks. Now, the battery for your typical electric car, Tesla, let's say, it's a pretty good sized battery.
Yes.
Right? Now, if something goes wrong with those batteries, they will burst into flames. And when they do, they are like a blowtorch, those lithium-ion batteries. But the weight of the battery that it would take, the size of the battery that it would take to power an Army tank would have to be immense. Now, it takes a couple of hours to recharge your car. How many days will it take to recharge your tank?
Well, not only that, here's something else. If you need a repair on your Tesla or any electric car, one of the most expensive components to repair or replace happens to be the battery. In the Tesla, it can run anywhere from $12,000 to $20,000. Just for the battery.
Right.
Can you imagine the cost of a battery on a tank?
Well, and he wants to cut funding to the military. So how, you tell right. me, Diane, how's that going to work out?
He'll take it out of NASA. He'll take it out of school budgets. He'll find ways to take it out because by doing this, he plays to the AOC and that ilk, and he'll get their votes.
Well, but you brought up a good point at the very beginning of this. You're rolling into battle, and your tank battery dies. Okay, now you might be in Ukraine, you might be out in the desert somewhere. You know, who knows where our tanks will be deployed? Okay, then you got to find the charging station, like you said. That's right. Going to be difficult. But if the military's going to go greeny-weeny,
yeah.
whatever you yeah. plug it into is going to have to, it should, you know, if you're really going to go greeny-weeny, whatever you plug into should also be green-powered.
Well, you know, you also have to think of our bomber jets.
Okay.
Can you imagine them going green? Can you imagine, you know, something goes wrong? Never mind getting them up in the air, you know, on a battery. But let's say you have to drop bombs or something, and oops, it doesn't work. The electricity's out. I mean,
well,
the battery's
now,
out,
look,
whatever.
I've got the perfect solution for that.
Yeah.
Okay. We turn all of our aircraft in the military into gliders, and we launch them from catapults. All right. Now, you yeah. bring up the bombs, okay. I'm thinking that all bombs and all missiles in the greeny-weeny army, or military, because it's not just the army, it's the greeny-weeny military.
Right. Exactly.
All bombs, all missiles would have to be made of 100% recyclable or biodegradable material.
Look, the whole thing is stupid. It's absolutely stupid. And what these Democrats need to do is get over the fact that we need fossil fuels, period. We've got it in abundance here in this country. We need to start drilling again. We need to start pumping again. We need to, you know, start refracking again. Or You know, there's only one solution that I see. And I don't know, I mean, in the future, this might happen. I mean, talking way in the future. You want a clean source of energy? Nuclear power.
Well, now, we do have a lot of nuclear power in the Navy.
In the submarines, right.
Right.
So why don't they start looking at ways to adapt that maybe to the fighter jets, not to the land vehicles, but maybe to the fighter jets. But then again, there's a cost and there's certain dangers involved in that. We cannot give up fossil fuels. That's the bottom line.
Right. I do also have a solution to the Army tank issue.
Yeah.
Because finding a place to plug in an Army tank and waiting for it to recharge, that's just silly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So here's my solution. We cut a couple of holes in the bottom of the tank and we Fred Flintstone it everywhere it goes.
Hey, why not? I mean, this thing is such a stupid proposal. Biden has already kind of destroyed our military with his whole woke nonsense.
Well,
no,
yeah.
Our military knows which pronouns to use, you know, in the 60 plus something genders. But what's going to happen when our military basically becomes green impotent?
Well, exactly. And you know, he's pandering to the AOCs when he says something like that. There is no way to do that.
Right.
You know, the technology simply doesn't exist. All right.
No.
If you're going to have a military, you damn well better have some oil to go with it.
Absolutely. And something else I want to say about this, word is coming out that not only is Obama pulling his strings, guys, all the things he's doing mimic Obama's policies to one degree or another.
Right.
But word is now coming out that George Soros has a hand in all this nonsense as well. More than just money, I'm talking about input. And
sure.
That in itself is extremely dangerous.
You know, bullets, it seems to me, they operate off of gunpowder, and that leaves a carbon footprint. So from this point forward, our military will have to just plain simply manually insert bullets into our enemy. They can pick the orifice of their choice.
That's true. Or maybe they'll go back to bow and arrows.
Well, see, now that would destroy trees.
Yeah, but it's clean.
Good point. All right. So, look, it's stupid. It's a dumbass thing to say, but Biden said it. So what do you expect?
Yep.
In other news, there's been a little bit of a shakeup over at Twitter.
I absolutely love this. There was a meme that I put up yesterday that seems, I'm trying to call it up here, that seems to be the epitome of Elon Musk. And the reason I'm saying that, it is getting major shares, likes across the internet. And what I basically said was Elon Musk, a true modern day Renaissance man with a Midas touch and a healthy dose of both common sense and American patriotism. Go, Elon, go. Now, Elon Musk, right now, you know, there's always the thing, if you could meet any person, dead or alive, who would you choose to meet right now? I'm sure you've seen that nonsense on Facebook and other sites. Hands down, Elon Musk.
I agree.
Hands down.
Right. You know, if I had to make that choice today,
you
know, this guy is truly a visionary. And I'll tell you something. I always suspected, you know, from the moment he started to poke at Twitter with a sharp stick, I thought he's going to wind up buying Twitter. I had no idea how fast it would happen.
Well, there's even some quotes going around. Now, I don't know if they're legitimate that, you know, maybe he should buy the wall, get that wall built. And there's a couple of others along those lines, you know, that what he can do. Again, I don't know which ones of those are true or those are just wishing on someone else's part.
Look, there's always a lot of people that are willing to help a guy like Elon Musk spend his money.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know what? He's got the money to spend it if he chooses to do so.
Well, but he chose to buy Twitter because he firmly believes, and I think he's right, that he can make Twitter a much better platform than it's ever been. He can do things with Twitter that nobody else has thought to do. He's a visionary thinker. He's an innovator. You know, he's gonna wind up, I guarantee you, within a year, he's going to wind up having Twitter become a platform by which people can pay their bills on Twitter.
You never know what's going to happen with him. He's that brilliant. He really is a renaissance man and a visionary. He sees the future. Elon Musk lives in the future. He doesn't live in the past, and he exists, though, in the present. But his vision always concerns the future. And for that alone, I admire him, because I'm a lot like that. You learn from the past, you live your life in the present, but you always kind of look forward to what could be down the road.
Well, and he takes what could be and makes it what is.
Exactly. Yeah. I think he's absolutely wonderful. And here, though, two things. First, Donald Trump, you know, did start Truth Social, of which I'm a member and many other, you know, millions of people are. But Elon Musk wants to reinstate his Twitter account.
Right.
Trump has publicly said he does not want to go back to Twitter. I think Trump is making a mistake here.
Yeah.
Yes, keep your Truth Social. That's very important, of course. But he needs Twitter and what Elon Musk is going to do with it.
Well,
Elon Musk is going to do more good things with it than Devin Nunes is going to do for Truth Social.
Well, Devin Nunes is going to be able to run Truth Social, but he's not the visionary that Elon Musk is. And I think you're right. I think Trump would be almost foolish not to go back to Twitter, even though he's got Truth Social. But, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't think Elon Musk really needs Trump on Twitter to make Twitter viable. But I'll tell you this much. You know, like I said, I think Bitcoin is going to become, you know, cryptocurrency is going to become a thing that can be traded and used on Twitter. I think Musk is going to make that happen. I think a lot of things, you know, going to make Twitter a going business, a thriving business. But Trump needs to get back on there just to emphasize the fact that it's free speech.
Exactly. Elon Musk doesn't need Trump, but in a way, Trump, folks, does need Twitter.
Yes.
Because Elon Musk's whole interest in this buyout of Twitter happened because Trump was thrown off.
Well, Trump was thrown off, and they shut down the Babylon Bee. They kicked Babylon Bee off.
They kicked Babylon Bee off also, and a few other things. I mean, many of us have been censored for short periods of time on Twitter, but we have not had our accounts totally, you know, negated. And here it is. You've got two big giants, Trump and Babylon Bee, who could bring a lot to Twitter and also their particular cause.
Right. Right.
Because Truth Social, guys, it's the concept is great. It's not that user friendly yet. It's still only for Apple phones. And it's not even online on computers yet.
Right. It's a very slow rollout for Truth Social. I think Trump will reverse himself on this. I think a couple of weeks down the road, he's probably going to go, yeah, what the hell, put me back on Twitter. You know,
I hope so.
I think he will. But what I'm laughing at right now is the liberal left's reaction Elon Musk buying Twitter. Oh, my God, they're melting down. Their heads were exploding yesterday when the deal was done. They haven't stopped exploding today. They're coming apart at the seams. You know, like, oh, my God, having one person in charge of a platform. Wait a minute. Zuckerberg's Facebook? In charge of Facebook.
Yeah.
Bezos owns a major newspaper in this country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, and wasn't it the same liberal left that's melting down and their heads are exploding now, who up until the last couple of weeks were saying, well, you can't do anything about Facebook and Twitter and Google and these, you know, censoring people because they're privately owned after all. They're not the government. Well, now Twitter is privately owned by a different guy who's going to open it up to free speech. And, oh, my God, we can't have that.
Exactly. Well, there are two things that I think we need to at least touch upon. First of all, Jeff Bezos, he's a total, I don't know, he's just nuts. He's so far to the left, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Now, he was Amazon's founder and former CEO of Amazon. And he now made a very nasty comment about Elon Musk. He said, quote, after the deal finally went through, quote, interesting question. Did the Chinese government just gain a bit of leverage of the town square? That was his response to a New York Times reporter who noted that Tesla's reliance on China for its lithium batteries. So what he was doing was taking his automotive company, sort of throwing it into the Twitter buyout and finding a way, he buys lithium batteries from China, so can we really trust him with Twitter? That's point one. Now, the other point, which is just the opposite. The original co-founder of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, he was the founder and the CEO. He actually said that Musk's purchase is the right path forward. And he continued by saying, in principle, I don't believe anyone should own or run Twitter. It wants to be a public good at a protocol level, not a company. Solving the problem of the company is basically Elon Musk is the one that I trust the most. I trust his mission to extend the light of consciousness. Now, this guy Dorsey, you know, he allowed a lot of this stuff to happen on Twitter before he left.
Right.
Okay, so he needs to bear some of the responsibility for what happened to Twitter. But at the same time, he realizes what he did was wrong and is heralding the buyout by Elon Musk. And on the other hand, you have Bezos, who has nothing to do with a social media site per se, trying to think that China is part of Elon Musk's buyout? How dare he?
Well, I mean, look, if you want to go green in this country, and all these idiot liberals do, you're going to have to buy all your lithium from China. They've got the biggest lithium mines in the world. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that are in bed with China and have been for decades. All right? So don't give me that crap, you liberal morons. You know, we understand, you know, what's going on here. You know, these are the people that, oh, my God, you can't have an eccentric multi-billionaire be in charge of a social media platform. Well, all of Silicon Valley is owned, operated, run on a daily basis by multi-millionaires who are far-left liberals.
Exactly.
I mean, so, this is nothing but hypocrisy and it's bull crap. But, you know, Hollywood has had to lean into this thing. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of Hollywood liberals, oh my God, you know, they were saying before the deal went through yesterday, if this deal goes through, I'm leaving the U.S. or I'm leaving Twitter. Well,
you mean just like the celebrities left when Trump got elected?
Yeah, yeah, same morons. You know, it's the same, mm-hmm. you know, pack of pansies. You mm-hmm. know, they're not going to leave Twitter. And if they do, good. Good riddance. But one of the primary idiots out there, Rob Reiner. Remember Rob Reiner?
Meathead.
Meathead from All in the Family, right?
Yeah.
He puts up a tweet that says, "Now that Elon Musk is buying Twitter, the question for all of us is, will he allow a criminal who used this platform to lie and spread disinformation to try and overthrow the U.S. government to return and continue that criminal activity? If he does, how do we combat it?" Well, John Rich from Big and Rich, country music star, John Rich replied, and he says, "Calm down, Rob. I'm sure he'll let Hillary stay on."
that is a good one.
I mean, you got to hand it to John Rich. That's top flight.
Yes. Yes. And what's interesting, you know, a lot of people have asked, what political party is Elon Musk? Actually, he considers himself, use your quotes here, a moderate.
Right.
However, he doesn't say if he's moderate Democrat or Republican. However, he has made numerous large donations in support of Republican politicians.
You know,
so you kind of know where he leaves.
Right.
But he does say at the same time, and this is a quote, when asked by a reporter, "To be clear, I am not conservative, but I give to Republican politicians." In other words, Craig, I have a feeling that Elon Musk is more like you and I.
I think he is. I really do.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. But here's the bottom line. Here's the bottom line for liberals and why they're just coming apart at the seams right now because of this. Okay. What they see here is the end of democracy as we know. And I understand we're a constitutional republic.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in their minds, oh, this is the worst thing possible. The end of democracy, according to the liberal machine, is when people are allowed to say what they think.
Yeah.
That will absolutely, in their minds, cause the downfall of the world as we know it. You cannot have democracy, ask a liberal. You cannot have democracy if people are allowed to speak freely.
Of course, because democracy, plain and simple, is mob rule. By the way, I just got some information. He is actually a registered independent.
And that does not surprise me.
No, it doesn't.
That really doesn't surprise me at all, you know. But look, Twitter, it's going to take some time. I think it's probably going to take 5-6 months, to be honest with you. He's going to get in there. He's going to have his engineers get in there. They're going to figure this whole thing out. But within 6 months, he's going to make that algorithm that they've been using to ban people with public.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to air the dirty laundry.
Once it's made public, there are so many ways to get around it.
Well, he'll remove it. You know, he'll remove it.
But that, I mean, removing it is basically simple. It's, you know, a click of a computer key could remove the whole thing. But people are still going to be, for a while, leery of what's
right.
going to be done.
Right. But it's all going to work out. The good news is the bluebird of happiness is now free.
The bluebird is free. It's flying all over the place. I just hope for the upcoming election that Trump gets back on that bluebird.
I think he will. I think he'd be foolish not to. But folks, we have come to the bottom of the hour. That means we have to take a quick break. 30 minutes from now, I'm talking about the meme and the mirror. But when we come back from this short break, couple of station IDs, Diane's got it with On Lies Told and What Ifs. Folks, please.
On Lies Told, War Crimes and What Ifs.
Oh. Oops. I wrote it down wrong. Folks, stay with us. There's more Right Side Patriots after this.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi, guys. Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on rspradio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot and Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. Welcome to the Tuesday night edition of the show. If you miss any part of it, tomorrow morning, you can go to rspradio1.com, click the podcast button, and there it will be, tonight's show in all of its blazing glory.
Yes.
Diane, you have decided for your op-ed this week in your segment of the show tonight to kind of look into the possibilities, what might be the possibilities, be they great, be they small, of Vladimir Putin being brought up on war crimes charges. And what did you discover as you went through all of this?
Okay, well, first we got to, before we get into the gist of that, a little bit of information before leading up to that. And let's start with this. This is a quote by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. He said it on April 23rd of this year. Quote, "This war will be written in the history books," end quote. And you know what, guys? He's right. Simply, Vladimir Putin screwed up. For Russia's president, and I use the word president figuratively, not literally, never expected Ukraine to put up such a fight in the name of freedom, liberation, and self-determination. Nor did he ever expect to see NATO stand united behind a country that's not even a NATO member. And in his thinking that Ukraine would cower in fear and quickly surrender when up against the Russian army, what Putin forgot when planning his war was the cardinal rule that elections do indeed have consequences. And in the case of Ukraine, those consequences can be summed up in two words: Volodymyr Zelensky, a leader the West has not seen since the days of Ronald Reagan. And while President Trump saw no new wars happening on his watch, courtesy of his rightful America First policies, it was Reagan alone who had the courage to publicly demand that then Russian President Mikhail Gorbachev tear down this wall, in reference to the Berlin Wall separating the then two Germanies. And while many believe that Putin's goal in regards to Ukraine is but his first step in remaking modern-day Russia into the old-style, much-feared Soviet Union, a pre-Reagan Soviet Union, that is, what Putin really wants, I believe, is for Mother Russia to stand alone and unchallenged as the world's number one dictatorial superpower. And it's this very goal, which now seems to go against both the wants and needs of the Russian people themselves, a people who are starting to lean more decidedly towards the West in their wanting to be a part of capitalism's success. And how do we know this? As more and more Russians learn the truth about Putin's war and the atrocities being committed against innocent Ukrainian civilians, and as they themselves are becoming economic victims of a war Putin still claims is being perpetrated in their name, Russians are fighting back against Putin and his self-appointed hierarchy via once unheard of, let alone seen, anti-war protests in Russia's streets, now willing to risk arrest, imprisonment, and even death in support of the Ukrainian brothers and sisters, if you will, as well as in an effort to try and oust the man who sees the past as Russia's future. Craig, we all know that some Russian troops deployed in Ukraine are refusing to fight against a people and a country they have no qualms with.
You know, it's interesting because, like you say, you don't really think of anti-war protests going on in Russia because of Russia's history, especially when it was the Soviet Union. But just as it is, every time propaganda replaces actual news, the propaganda fails to live up to the reality. Is that what we're seeing here?
Absolutely, because Vladimir Putin's lies that his incursion into Ukraine was solely about his stopping NATO's eastern expansion, coupled with a permanent freeze on any further growth of NATO's military infrastructure and a ban on intermediate-range missiles in Europe. But that was all a lie, for the truth is that Putin is trying hard to take back the very country who fought long and hard to become a sovereign nation. And this is seen not only in Ukraine's rising death toll that some rightfully equate to genocide, but in the seemingly overwhelming devastation, actually annihilation, being inflicted upon southern Ukraine cities like Mariupol. And when last week's developments are added into the mix, as in Putin's possible incursion into the Transnistria region of Moldavia, which, by the way, guys, today it was announced he has shot missiles into Moldova. Now, that's an area backed and armed by Moscow. The proof of Putin's true intentions become clear. So what are those intentions? One just needs to look at Putin's envisioned map, which I have in my article, to understand that with Putin now saying he only wants Ukraine south, which to him includes said region of Moldova, Ukraine loses all access to both the Sea of Azov and the Black Sea, along with their ports. Simply, access to the Black Sea itself is crucial to to Ukraine's economic survival in relation to commerce, trade, and even military operations. For without that access, and with Russia's ally Belarus to the north, coupled with his successes in the east and west, except for Poland and a tiny bit of Romania, Ukraine becomes dangerously landlocked by Russia. And if Poland or Romania were ever in Putin's sights, could NATO be counted upon to go against Putin, as both are NATO members? I think not, as NATO would still be cowering in fear of Putin's using nuclear and or chemical weapons. And this, Craig, might have been Putin's plan all along, for southern Ukraine, not Kiev, I believe, has always held the key to Ukraine's possible defeat. Defeat via economic suffocation. While Russia gains even more access to the Black Sea, Ukraine loses all access they had.
Now, you've got in your op-ed at thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, you've got a map in there that you've got big enough that everybody can see it, and mm-hmm. What is being called the new Russia, use your air quotes for now, is in orange. So people can see where Russia is. The orange used to be yellow, used to be Ukraine, and you can mm-hmm. see what Putin's trying to do and what Diane is talking about here. But moving forward, first of all, Putin doesn't even really call this thing a war. But no. If you had to compare what he's doing, let's face it, it is a war. So if you had to compare this war, Putin's war, with anything in Russia's past, what would it be?
Okay, well, let's start by saying that Putin's war, the war, what he to this day still calls a special operation, is indeed about true Soviet style territorial expansion. In this case, retaking satellite countries Russia lost with the end of the Cold War, along with his seeking revenge on NATO, the very organization he perceives as standing in his way. In fact, about a week or so ago, right after the Russian Navy's Black Sea flagship, the Moskva, sank while being towed back to port after having been struck by Ukraine's Neptune missiles, Russian news commentator Olga Skabayeva stated to her viewers that they need to, quote, recognize that Russia was not only fighting against NATO infrastructure, if not NATO itself, end quote. And to stress her point even further, she added, quote, one can safely call what it has escalated into is World War III. That's absolutely for sure, end quote. Now remember that in Putin's Russia, what is reported on state television must first be okayed by Russian propaganda ministry before being said on air. So if it's reported on air that Putin is now fighting World War III, even if it's in his own mind alone, the question then becomes, why can't or won't NATO accept that as fact and act accordingly, as in give Zelensky the needed fighter planes that he's been asking for? And no, the answer is really quite simple. It's because NATO, once again, still cowers in fear of Vladimir Putin's musings about using atomic and or chemical weapons if need be. And this alone allows the fear of possibilities being stronger for NATO than the reality of what most likely is empty threats by Putin, the man who relishes in using old Cold War tactics like fear to dictate to NATO what they can and cannot do. And yet, while Ukraine and her people are paying an overwhelming physical price in both blood and treasure, Zelensky's forces, comprised mostly of self-organizing and self-mobilized volunteers, are holding strong, thus leaving what Putin hoped would be but a five-day, easily won war to face the chaos of war itself, empowering Ukraine and not Russia. So while the Russian army is forced to fight on, the Russian people are truly growing weary of a war, especially now that Russian forces have begun attacking Ukraine's entire eastern front after Ukraine troops in Mariupol last Sunday rejected Putin's ultimatum that they surrender or face, quote, total annihilation. So, Craig, as the fighting continues on unabated, talk of Putin having committed war crimes continues to circulate in the West. But as the old saying goes, quote, talk is cheap, actions speak louder than words, end quote.
So the frustration that Putin is feeling is obvious, it's palpable. Thinking this was going to be, like you said, a five-day deal, in and out and done. And it's not, because of the tenacity of the Ukrainian people. So he's lashing out in every way he can. He's making this as bloody and as bastardized, if I could use mm-hmm. that term here, as anything we have pretty much ever seen in a theater of war. So I guess at that point is, what is the probability or the likelihood, do you think, that war crimes charges could be brought against Putin or anybody else?
Okay, and that's a good question. Will Vladimir Putin and his generals ever be tried for war crimes, let alone be convicted of said crimes? And here being the only time I have ever agreed with Joe Biden in anything, we still see his mop-up team continuing to quell Biden's words that he believes, as do I, that Vladimir Putin is a war criminal. And while the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court in The Hague, the ICC, recently stated that investigation into possible war crimes being committed in Ukraine is on the table and that evidence is being gathered to try and bring the perpetrators to justice, the fact remains that proving war crimes took place in Ukraine is not as cut and dry as it seems. And this is no matter that under international law, the, quote, purposeful targeting of civilians, as well as assaults that cause disproportionate civilian casualties, end quote, when military targets alone were the stated objective, have indeed taken place in Ukraine, something we have all witnessed every time we turn on the TV, pick up a newspaper, or simply peruse the internet. Quote, the expectation for prosecuting someone for war crimes and crimes against humanity is to be able to demonstrate individual responsibility and be able to demonstrate that they are directing or responsible for a policy of committing these crimes. And that can be very difficult, especially when you don't have the cooperation of the state from which that kind of person originates, which we would obviously not have in the case of Russia, end quote. Now, those are the words of Marty Flax, director of the Center for Strategic and International Studies Human Rights Initiative, who recently stated that prosecutors need three things to hold perpetrators of war crimes accountable. First, evidence must be presented showing that serious international crimes have taken place. Second, that a venue with a jurisdiction to try the crimes can be secured. And third, that identification of defendants must occur, as in an individual or individuals must be named, as the ICC does not and will not try states. In other words, Vladimir Putin himself would carry the full brunt of any charges levied, while Russia, along with her military, would not be charged. And while Vladimir Putin's actions in regards to Ukraine surely do meet the first two criteria, meaning his actions ordered would now have officially been deemed, quote, atrocity crimes, as in but not limited to genocide and or crimes against humanity, and with a needed trial venue being fairly easy to secure, it's the third criteria that could take years to happen. For naming Putin as the defendant could lead to serious ramifications. Craig, how so? Because it would involve Mother Russia herself, as in the Russian people or even the military, turning on and turning in Vladimir Putin for trial, something I'm not sure the Russian people, the military, let alone those in the Russian government, are ready to do just yet.
Well, you know, this guy at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Human Rights is Marty Flax.
That's a woman, by the way.
Oh, that's a woman. Okay, well, it was M-A-R-T-I, and I've seen, you know, men's... Anyway, okay, so she's giving you kind of the legal terminology.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're going to take this a bit further here in just moment, but it seems to me there are one of two ways in which somebody like Putin would wind up being tried. One is if he loses the war.
Right.
Okay. And I mean, Hitler lost the war. If Hitler hadn't killed himself, he would have been on trial. Most of his top brass were on trial. What is the other way that this could happen with Putin?
Okay. simply for Russia to arrest and then surrender Putin to the ICC, prosecutors, would most likely take a new Russian revolution of sorts, an actual regime change, not unlike the Bolshevik revolution of 1917. That's not an easy task to accomplish, especially while the war is still ongoing. Never mind the fact that many in Russia's military still hold a strong personal allegiance to Putin and would put down even a mere musing of revolution. And remember, Putin himself must be present at trial, as the ICC also does not and will not try individuals in absentia. So, where exactly do we stand now in regards to Putin ever being brought to justice, let alone trial? As I was writing this article, know that the physical evidence of Putin's wrongdoings is surely being collected, what with media footage showing the reality of all one really needs to know. Folks are being interviewed to help corroborate witness testimony. What's referred to as contextual information and documentation, which explains both the circumstances and severity of where the alleged crimes were committed, has already been partially cataloged, and yet Vladimir Putin still holds the world in the grip of fear of both nuclear and chemical weapons. And this is especially true after last Wednesday's announcement by Russia's defense ministry that it had conducted the first test launch of its new Sarmat intercontinental ballistic missile, a nuclear weapon that Putin claims will, quote, prove food for thought for those who try to threaten our country, end quote. Translation, even putting threats aside, we know that Vladimir Putin has committed numerous war crimes. And we also know that if an arrest warrant was issued by the ICC, that all 123 members of the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court would then be obligated to turn him over to said ICC if he were to be caught, a slim possibility for sure. And even though Ukrainian fighters continue to hold their ground against Putin's illegal incursion into their sovereign nation, Putin understands that as long as he holds on to power and avoids physically being present before the court, it will be difficult for him ever to be brought to justice. Remember, a trial of this magnitude would drag on for years before any verdict is reached. And how do we know this? Because the ICC case regarding the 2014 Russian invasion of Crimea is still ongoing. Now, if only our government would turn over what it has on both Ukraine and Putin, information that would surely help the prosecution, maybe then Vladimir Putin would be brought to justice. But with Biden in the White House and with Obama pulling his strings, we know that will never happen. And for obvious reasons. Sadly, case closed.
You know, there's a lot of talk out there. You and I both see it on social media every day. You know, people wanting Vladimir Putin brought up on war crimes. You know, you don't just walk into the Kremlin with a search warrant and say we're here to take Vlad.
Right.
You know, it doesn't work that way. And like I said earlier, the surest way to get somebody like him put up on war crimes trials is if he loses the war, which is why he is so desperate to win this war.
And I'm still going to throw out there that if he loses this war and he knows he's going to be tried, he channeled his inner Hitler for this war. He can channel his Hitler as his excuse out of all responsibility for his war. And by that, I mean a bullet to the head.
Well,
of his own doing.
You know, that's one way out, okay? Mm-hmm. The other way for him is much more dire. It seems like a rather benign word to use in this circumstance, but, you know, right now he's focused on winning, okay? Mm-hmm. But if he gets to the point where he feels, I'm losing and I've got nothing else to lose, he could unleash chemicals or nuclear weapons.
That's a scary thing, but I I think if he unleashed anything, it would be chemical over nuclear, because remember, the nuclear fallout would go right over him in Moscow and Russia.
Yeah, but you know, I'm putting forth a scenario here where he feels he's got nothing else to lose. He's losing the war. I mean, this is the scenario. He's losing the war, losing big time. Russia's going to be a shell of its former self. He's going to be brought up on war crimes trials. There's a good chance that Russia could lose any military, any world stage impact they've ever had. If he finds himself backed into that corner as a rabid junkyard dog, and he feels, I've got nothing else to lose, they're going to put me on trial and I'll never see the light of day again. I don't give a damn what happens to Russia now. He would do it. I mean, it's a dire prediction, but that's what it would take, I think, for him to unleash that.
I'm really not so sure of that, because the one thing about Putin, his whole mindset is rebuilding the Russian Empire, whatever you want to call it. Russian Empire, Soviet Union, Mother Russia. He is very much a Russian statist. For him, everything evolves around Russia. I don't think he would let the fallout of a nuclear weapon, and remember, it would be carried over the jet stream. I've written about that. I even showed exactly where it would go, right over Moscow. I just don't think he would do that. I think, though, he would unleash a chemical, major chemical weapons.
I don't think this guy's got a shred of sentimentality about him. I think if he found himself in the position Hitler found himself in when Hitler put a bullet in his brain, you know, with troops closing in on Moscow, the end is near, the war is lost, everything's going to be exposed, and he's going down in flames. I mean that's a way distant outside scenario. I don't see that ever happening. Okay.
But there's a scenario you're not mentioning at all. Okay, and it's twofold, and I've mentioned it in the article. Either there is a new Bolshevik revolution, if you will, a Russian revolution, or one of his own inner circle can say, look what this man has done to our country, the only way to save our country, and they take him out.
Well, and like you say, a brand new version of the Bolshevik Revolution, I think it's the best way to go, and I'll tell you why.
It's
the people. And if they would rise up and do something like that, okay, they could go to the world and they could say, look, we put an end to this. We put an end to this guy. We're turning him over. We don't care what happens to him at this point. We don't want any part of this. We never wanted this to begin with. He lied to us. And, you know, please, rest of the world, help us. You know, get these sanctions off of us. Let us become a viable part of the world community. You know, if somebody just takes him out, and I don't have anything against that, don't get me wrong, if somebody just takes him out, you don't know what you're going to get in replacement for him, and the people have not risen up. So the best solution is a new revolution.
Right, and the replacement, you know, if it's not through the people, the replacement could even be worse. If you can imagine worse right now, it could be worse.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty open-ended. But if the people rise up and the people put an end to Putin's reign of terror and war crimes, and they put an end to the war, and they take Putin and they hand him over to the ICC, you know, then it becomes a whole different situation. It's a much better situation for the entire planet at that point.
Yeah, it's... It's a very, very sad situation, what's been happening here. But you know what makes me even more angry is the people here in our country who are foolish enough, misinformed enough, that people like you and I are getting lambasted all over the internet for supporting Zelensky and Ukraine over Russia. They don't get it. They just don't understand what is happening here.
Well, they need to read this article, and they can do that if they go to your blog, Diane, at thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, or if they go to rspradio1.com, they can get the link either place. They can read through the article, and we hope that at the same time they will share the article far and wide, because the more people that understand the intricacies involved in war crimes trials and in what Putin's trying to do, and a look at that map that you have in the blog is going to show them in living color exactly what he's trying to gain, at least in the short term.
He even calls it the new Russia.
Right.
I didn't make that title up, folks. He actually calls that whole area that you can see in the map New Russia, and it basically hooks into Crimea, which means he blocks any and all access that Ukraine has to the two seas.
Go to thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com or rspradio1.com. Get the link to Diane's op-ed. Share it everywhere. With that, it's the top of the hour. We need to take a quick break. When we come back, the last segment of tonight's show, The Meme and The Mirror. Stay with us. There's more Right Side Patriots after this.
Hey guys, Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. Any part of tonight's show you missed? Well, go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning. Show will be there. If you click the podcast button, you can be one of the pod people.
Mm-hmm.
We love our pod people.
We're getting more and more pod people by the day.
Yeah, it's always a good thing. All right, so the meme and the mirror. I've got a feeling, Diane, when we're done with this, we're going to have an interesting discussion, you and I. Okay, I mean, you know, this is just one of those things. Here we go. On Easter, I created a meme and I posted it to Facebook. It was a rather innocuous meme, a play on words in my own snarky style. That meme quickly became one of the most responded to posts that I put up in quite some time. Naturally, there were those who got it, and there were those who didn't. There were those who laughed at it and those who didn't. There were, no doubt, many who saw it and just scrolled on by. Of course, there were those who felt a deep need to post up a comment regarding the post and regarding me as the poster of the meme. Many of those who chose to respond to the meme excuse me, many of those who chose to respond to the meme were quick to condemn me for it, and some of their comments were downright laughable, although I'm rather sure they weren't trying to garner a chuckle from me. Now, throughout this commentary, I'm going to address some of those comments, but before I get into all of that, I feel the need to point something out with regards to those who were so quick to condemn the meme and condemn me for creating and posting it. At best, they felt an overwhelming need to point out to me the error of my ways so that I might become a better person. Now, I believe that is giving them way too much benefit of the doubt, because not one of those who so quickly condemned me for the original post, not one, bothered to inquire of me why I posted it. Now, to the holier-than-thou, the why of it simply didn't matter, because I assure you there was indeed a reason that I would have gladly shared with anyone who bothered to ask. Diane, I simply call it an experiment.
Right. You were basically working off a theory that you and I have used for the 8.5 years, almost 9 years we've been doing Right Side Patriots. And that's the theory of a hypocrisy. Democrats are hypocrites.
Right. But they're not the only ones.
Right.
Right. So I wanted to test the theory that there are hypocrites amongst the conservative crowd. Oh, we know such people exist among the liberal bunches, but I wanted to know whether or not the hypocrites amongst the conservatives would readily show themselves, and they did. Okay, the meme itself that I put up to get the reaction amongst conservatives. A pile of blue pills stamped Pfizer. Mm-hmm. It says, "He is risen, Viagra, it's a miracle." Okay?
Yep.
That's it. It's a bit of yeah, well, look, it's a bit of snarky satire, but satire that apparently those to whom I refer to as the holier-than-thou simply couldn't handle. Many of their comments were straight out of the liberal playbook. They took personal offense at the meme, thus proving to me that being offended at something is innocuous is not the sole purview of the liberals. For instance, there were those who were so offended that they decided to unfriend me from Facebook. Now, I suggest that doing that over a meme is the conservative equivalent of cancel culture. Mm-hmm. Somebody posts something that they don't like, and their immediate response is to cancel that person. How completely liberal of them. Now, let me put it this way. If you are so easily and irrevocably offended by a satirical meme that your instant reaction is to unfriend the person who posted it, you really are no different than the liberals of the cancel culture. And before you ever again speak out against the cancel culture, a look in the mirror might be what you need. Now, at this point, I've got some screen grabs of some of those comments to me that people were going to unfriend me. Mm-hmm. All right? Very interesting. Okay? And feel free to read down through them. The posts are there. These are screenshots. It's not me retyping them. These are actual screenshots. So you'll see the people and you will see their comments. Next up are those who insist that I was mocking Christianity. Clearly, in the meme, I did not mention Christianity. I simply used three words at the top of the meme that some people obviously believe are owned lock, stock, and barrel by Christianity. But does that make me wonder how many of those people have ever uttered the phrase or heard others utter the phrase, "It's a miracle"? It's a miracle that I wasn't seriously hurt in the fall. It was a miracle that we actually won the game. It was a miracle that I got there when I did, or it was a miracle that I was late getting there. People use the word miracle all the time. But have any of those holier-than-thou sorts ever condemned anyone or themselves for using that word? Do they really think, Diane, that they can see a catch made in a baseball game or a quirk of timing to be a miracle that are on the same par with the miracles described in the Bible with regard to Jesus?
Well, the one thing about these holier-than-thous, to me, is they consider themselves conservatives. And they'll spout out all their nonsense. If you don't believe like them, you're wrong, you're going to hell, etc., etc. And yet, if you delve into them personally, they are the biggest hypocrites of all. All those on the moral high ground, they're cheating, they're having affairs, they're cursing, they're this, they're that. Everything that they,
right,
you know, go against everybody else for, it's okay if they do it, but it's not okay if someone else does it. And they'll always throw in that word miracle somehow. It's a miracle God hasn't smite you yet or something. It's just total hypocrisy and sort of alluding to it being a form of cancel culture is 100% correct.
Well, their logic is flawed. I mean, according to the holier-than-thou logic, using the word miracle to describe anything but a Jesus miracle would be mocking Christianity and not condemning the loose use of the word miracle would be the same as condoning such mockery. By the way, I wonder how many of the holier-than-thou crowd had ham for Easter dinner. Ham! To commemorate the most famous Jew since Moses, and they never gave a thought to what that was mocking. Mirror, mirror on the wall. Mm-hmm. Next up in the hit parade, we have the silly name-calling and the accusations with no basis in reality or fact. Again, a very liberal-minded trait of the holier-than-thou crowd. There were several examples of such sprinkled through the comments on the meme thread. I was called a blasphemer, and my patriotism was called into question. Again, if you go to thenationalpatriot.com, you can grab this article, you can look through it, you can read and see who was saying what. These are screenshots. It's not me recreating anything. First of all, let me just say, blasphemy is a word you don't hear or see very often these days. And I applaud this guy's attempt to use it, even if he had no grounds for it in this case. A prime example of blasphemy was when John Lennon said that the Beatles were more popular than Jesus. I made no such statement. Was the meme irreverent? Yes, perhaps. But satire usually is. If you want a great example of irreverent satire regarding Christianity, I would suggest reading Mark Twain's The Innocents Abroad. Mm-hmm. In that collection of stories from his travels throughout Europe, Twain writes about all the different churches he visited in so many European countries and towns. And one by one, he describes how each one has pieces of the cross of Jesus and the nails that held Jesus to that cross. Now, a discerning reader soon discovers that for all those churches to have what they claim to have, there would be enough wood and nails from the cross of Jesus to build a house. Blasphemy? No. Irreverent? Quite possibly. Satire? Without a doubt. And who exactly is being mocked by Twain in The Innocents Abroad? The holier-than-thous. And then, Diane, there's Laura Marshall Polchlepek. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing her last name
you
right.
Are.
If
you actually are.
Okay. If I'm not, I apologize. But she accused me of being a propagandist because, according to her, I am not a critical thinker. Can you believe that, Diane? I mean, seriously.
Yes, I can believe it because I had put some of my comments in on here defending what Craig was doing. And in one of them, I said to her that I am a believer in God the Father. I'm not a follower. And I believe in science, math, provable logic, and facts. Well, blasphemy, this, that, and the other thing. And I simply answered her, isn't anybody allowed an original thought? Everybody has to think like you in order to be correct?
Well, that according to her, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not just her, right, Diana? No. I mean, it's not just her. It's the holier-than-thou set.
Set. Yeah, and there's some key people amongst them.
Well, one of the things, I'll just read this comment, okay? She says, you're more propagandist than conspiracy theorist. You have to be have critical thinking skills for conspiracies. And being a team, she means Diana, myself, being a team doesn't mean that you aren't a partner too. Was that a sore subject? I apologize. I'm giggling because you trust the science. That's straight out of the MSM. And as always, not one question I asked ever got answered. She went on to say, I absolutely think this, talking about me here, I absolutely think he's paid oppositional control, same as MSM propaganda.
Oh, yes. Craig, you must get one rip-roaring paycheck every month.
Well, like I said on Friday's show, Diane, between me and Elon Musk, we've got about $300 billion.
Right. I mean, gee, there's something about you. I don't know. You hide it well.
You know, and I don't want to embarrass anybody by giving a breakdown of who has more. But between Elon and I, we've got $300 billion.
You got it covered.
Right. A few weeks ago, Laura Marshall Poachlepek posted on her own Facebook wall her belief in the conspiracy theory that man has never been to the moon. And as her proof regarding her belief in that conspiracy theory, she posted a video of a purported interview with Stanley Kubrick admitting that he filmed a fake Apollo 11 moon landing at the request of NASA. Now, the only problem was, as I quickly pointed out to her on her wall, was Kubrick was not in that fake confession. The actor in that video is a guy by the name of Tom Make. He was hired by the director of it, T. Patrick Murray, to pretend to be Kubrick. Now, according to Laura Marshall Poachlepek, then I was not a critical thinker because I dared to reveal the truth of that fake video. I even went so far as to post a video of Make as himself talking about Stanley Kubrick. Right. Now, I've got a big portion of that thread, and this is from her wall. Okay, I've got a big portion of that. I've got a picture of the real Kubrick on the left. It's part of the thread that I put up. I was showing her the differences between the two people. But you can read through all that. Poachlepek has since removed the fake Kubrick interview video from that thread. However, as of the 18th of this month, as of the 18th of this month, the rest of the thread was still available. I don't know if it's still there today. Laura Marshall Poachlepek said that to be a critical thinker, one has to think outside of the box. And that much is true. But she also claims that I only think inside the box, and because of that, I'm closed-minded. Laura Marshall Poachlepek, Diane, claimed then to be a critical thinker open to possibilities other than what she called mainstream or government propaganda. But now I'm the propagandist because I'm not capable of critical thought, because I'm not open-minded?
Yeah. Well, before you get into sort of the crux of her beef with you, all I have to say is people like Ms. Polnicek or Peck or whatever her name is, the holier-than-thous are the most closed-minded people who call themselves conservatives or Republicans. They are more closed-minded than anyone.
You've noticed that too?
It's their way or you're going to hell. I got news, for these people. If that's what they think, I live in South Florida. Hell won't be any different than the summers here. It might be different for them, but I don't think so. I think if you remember, Craig, one of the cardinal sins, if you will, is judging others.
Yeah.
All these holier-than-thous, forget, they have anointed themselves as the God police. If anyone's going where it's hot, it ain't us, it's them.
Well, okay, so here's the crux of my beef, or her beef with me, I should say. I'm not her brand of Christian, right? I don't adhere to blind faith. I question everything and always look for alternate explanations to any topic, including religious dogma. According to her, I'm a terrible Christian and a horrible patriot because I don't, in blind faith, simply believe that every word of the Bible is the gospel truth. Mm-hmm. So, exactly how terrible and horrible am I? Well, Thomas Jefferson once said, "Question with boldness even the existence of a God, because if there be one, he must more approve of the homage of reason than that of blindfolded fear." So either Jefferson, a patriot's patriot, was just an awful evil person, or I'm in pretty good company. Personally, I believe there is a God, but I don't believe I'd be a very good Christian if I didn't question the notion that every word of the Bible is absolute truth. What I would be in that case, if I did that, if I just believed it and didn't question it, what I would be is a follower blindfolded by fear. And we have enough people like that as it is. So,
yes, we do.
There you have it. A simple meme meant to expose those who, in their best effort at being the quintessential Christian, will berate and attempt to demean any who dare to think for themselves or who don't adhere to their specific brand of Christianity. Now, I'll leave you with this, folks, on this topic. If an innocuous, somewhat irreverent, and satirical meme is enough to trigger you into canceling someone from your friends list and offends you to the point of airing your liberal-level hypocrisy while at the same time trumpeting your holier-than-thou belief in blind faith and strength in conservatism, I suspect your faith is indeed fragile and your conservatism is on shaky ground. In no way am I comparing my meme to the actions of Jesus, nor am I trying to draw down any similarity between Jesus and myself. I am only using this to compare one moment to another separated by a couple of thousand of years. Imagine how the people who made the comments you see in this commentary might have passed similar judgment on Jesus had they seen him tossing the tables and running the money changers out of the temple. Were they to apply the same logic and tactics in that case, they would have labeled Jesus as a madman, a raging troublemaker prone to violence. But would that have been accurate? Of course not. The reactions I got did not surprise me, but it did confirm to me that there are those on the right who are just as eager to use certain tactics as those on the left. There are people who, unless you agree with them 100% of the time, especially on the topic of faith, are very apt to slap false labels on you and turn away from you. God forbid that a conservative candidate dare believe differently than the holier-than-thou crowd, because when those highlighted in this commentary get wind of that, they're going to do everything in their power to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory, Diane, this November and again in 2024. As conservatives, if we cannot agree to disagree on some topics, we will splinter the movement and lose the goal we seek to achieve.
Well, that's the main thing here. They are actually, or could actually, cause us to lose certain key races come 2022 and especially 2024. Look, they caused a lot of problems in previous elections. There's no reason that they wouldn't cause the problems now. They think they're so altruistic and they're doing it in the name of God, in the name of Jesus. No, they're not. They're doing it in the name of themselves because they are so far to the right that they actually shake hands with the left.
You know, you have used that analogy for years, and it is absolutely 100% accurate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just is. Look, just like the liberals, free speech is paramount to the holier-than-thou set until you disagree with or offend them. Now, I thank them, one and all, for participating in this experiment, and I hope for them nothing but the best and a clean mirror in which to gaze. But remember, When you make a snap judgment and believe you know everything you need to know about someone based on a single satirical meme, you have taken the easy way out. You're going to be wrong, and you probably won't like the reflection of your knee-jerk reaction in the mirror. I'm guessing some of the holier-than-thous won't like being highlighted in this commentary, but they really shouldn't mind after all, and I've got the screen capture in there to prove it. These are the results of an experiment, and they asked for it.
And guess what? You know, in an experiment, things either work out or they don't work out. Well, guess what? For these so-called conservatives who think they are better than everybody else, you just failed the experiment.
Well, you know, the meme and the mirror, that's the name of the commentary. You can get it at thenationalpatriot.com or rspradio1.com. I hope you share it everywhere. But, you know, this was, you know, we know, Diana and I know, because we see it on a daily basis. It's disgusting that we have as many hypocrites as we do on the right side of the aisle. But by and large, Diane, over 90% of the most hypocritical people we see on social media from our side of the aisle fall into that holier-than-thou crowd.
And that's quite sad, because what they're doing is they are dictatorial in their own way, you know, my way or the highway. And that's not, first of all, it's just plain stupid, because most of those people are plain stupid. But second of all, it goes against everything the Constitution lays out, which is certain rights we all have. And some of those rights, you know, without saying the words, actually include to believe the way we want to believe or not believe in God.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the First Amendment makes clear that government needs to stay out of religion. And folks, let me just tell you, I've said this, I've written this. If you want the government to stay out of religion, keep your religion out of government.
Exactly. And a lot of people misread that amendment. It really involves government incursion into religious practices.
Right.
It doesn't give these holier-than-thous the right to do what the government can do. You know, I personally, I'm tired of being damned to hell by people because while I believe in God, I'm not a follower. I'm not a blind follower. I believe in science, math, things that have been proven. I believe the earth is billions of years old, not 6,000 years old. I believe hominids started populating our planet over 2 million years ago, not, you know, in that 6,000-year-old frame. You don't like it? Fine. I'm not trying to push my belief on you. Don't push yours on me.
Well, and don't try to shove any religion into government. Don't say, well, our government needs to be more religious, or we need to get religion back into government. Boy, you do that, and you're giving free license for the government to start dictating religious values back to you.
A state religion. And here's something important. And if you people don't believe what I'm going to say, read your Constitution. Nowhere. Absolutely nowhere in the Constitution is the word Jesus or Jesus Christ. Nope. Nowhere.
Nope. It's not. You've got the Creator in our founding documents, but what Creator? They never specified, and that's because most of them were deists.
Right, and it never says America is to be a Christian nation.
Right.
Nowhere.
Nowhere. You know, I mean, look. Get to know your founding documents, and you know your faith is yours.
Right.
You know, my faith is mine. Mm-hmm. Everybody has their own view on faith, and you know, I think what's most important is that people have faith in something more impressive than themselves.
Exactly. That there's something higher than us.
Yeah, a higher power of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Follow your own star when it comes to that. I certainly do. But
and I do.
You know, And Diane, I got to say, we just got about a minute left here, but okay. I got to say, if people could hear some of the conversations you and I have when we're just sitting around on an afternoon with nothing to do, the last thing they would think of either one of us is that we're closed-minded thinking inside the box.
Exactly. If two people ever thought outside the box on so many subjects, it's us.
You know, and someday we'll have to have one of those conversations live on the air.
I was just thinking that. You know which conversation in specific.
I know which conversation. We'll save it. We'll save it. One of these days we'll do it. And yes. And people will go, oh, my God. But, you know, that's okay. Mm-hmm. That's okay. We're allowed. It's still a free country. Twitter is free. Twitter has been freed up. You can say what you damn well please on Twitter now.
Thanks, Elon.
But with that, Diane, we have reached the end of the show, and it's time for us to wrap it up tonight.
Okay, and with that, nighty-night, folks.
Good night, everybody. Have a great rest of the week. We'll catch up with you on Friday.